this is a really hard one to record and release. You know, I'm embarrassed to admit, embarrassed and ashamed to admit that I haven't always had a platform with, you know, 10,000 plus followers on social media. I never wanted that. I never aspired to that. I'm still learning what's the appropriate way to handle that level of influence. But I've never spoken about it. I've never spoken about inequality, about racism, about politics, about human rights, because it's so heavy and I don't feel educated enough. I don't feel aware enough. And I don't want to say the wrong thing. And I think that's where we're all at right now. We all want to say something. So many of us disagree with what's going on in the country and in the world. And when I say in the country, for all my international listeners, of course, I'm speaking of the United States. It's violent here. It's nasty here. So many friends from overseas are reaching out saying, "Are you okay? What is going on?" There's people standing on their roofs with guns. And instead of when the town shuts down to host a peaceful protest, people don't think, maybe I should join, maybe I should watch and cheer them on. They think, oh my gosh, let me grab guns and protect myself. On Saturday, JL and I were caught in a riot downtown Austin. And it was terrifying and it was sad. And then the very next morning, the sky was this eerie overcast red color, and just looking at people walking down the street wearing face masks, those scary ass face masks that hide a smile, was like, this is really the world we're living in. This is real. This isn't a movie. This isn't just something I see on the news that I can turn off and go live my normal life. This is real. And there's something about recent events with the killing of George Floyd, a black man, that's just enough is enough. Every single time shit like this happens, it makes me sick. But I've never felt more compelled to use my voice and now my newfound platform to help spread the message that this is wrong and this needs to stop. And there's a piece of my ego that thinks, God, how long have we been saying this, that this is wrong and this needs to stop? And I really feel in my heart and know in my gut that there's way more of us who feel and know that it's wrong and it has to stop. So why hasn't it? And my mind is just, it's stretched so thin, you guys. I feel so empathetic and sad for the police officers who are good, who are truly in service to protect us and to protect our communities. I feel so bad for their families who say goodbye to them every morning as they go off to work and think, oh my gosh, am I going to get a phone call? I feel so bad. And I feel, now I'm covered in truth bumps, so bad for people, African-American people, who just because of the color of their skin when they're born, are born at a disadvantage. It never really dawned on me how privileged I am until I started to educate myself these past few days that I can just get up and go to a dog park. I can bring my pug Jeffrey to a dog park without having to worry about it. The grocery. I can ride my bike down any road in any neighborhood and not fear for my life and not feel uncomfortable with people looking at me in a non-happy way. This African-American girl posted a picture on Instagram that really just, it wasn't the most powerful post I've read, but it won't leave my brain. She just posted a photo. She parked behind a truck that was covered in like a stick figure peeing on liberals and a Trump and white Republican and proud, just covered in bumper stickers like that. And she said, as a young black woman, I just want to bring my dog to the dog park. But when I know that there's somebody in that dog park with energy and thoughts and beliefs like this, do you think it's safe or do you think it's even comfortable for me to show up? And I thought, fuck, know. I mean, I know I don't know and I'll never know what it's like, but as a woman, I've experienced creepy men hitting on me everywhere I go. It gets to the point where I have to ask my boyfriend to go to the grocery for me or to pump my gas or, and to just know how uncomfortable it is that you can't even do minuscule tasks like that without feeling unsafe. It's fucked up. It's not right. And I just feel bad for the good cops, for the good humans. And I just feel like it's really a battle of good versus evil. And you know, one thing I want to point out, and Chalet and I do in this episode, is a lot of people, and I was one of them, are saying all lives matter. Like, what the hell? All lives matter. But there's been so many good analogies on social media lately that have totally changed my mind. One of them being, if your house is on fire and you call 911 for help, and all they say is, well, all houses matter, so why would we waste all of our resources and all of our time and attention on yours? Because all houses are important. Your neighbors are. Everyone down the streets are. You would say, what the hell? But mine's burning down. Help. So right now, Black Lives Matter, because their house is burning down. And it's up to all of us, all nationalities, races, genders, to help them to rebuild their house so it's safe and it's secure and it's fair and it's welcomed into any neighborhood. This week, I brought my friend Chalet Jean-Baptiste. She was on the podcast a few weeks ago. She's an African-American woman who was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and her father was actually a police officer for NYPD. She teaches English and African-American literature at a community college in Northern Virginia, and she is the absolute perfect person to talk to right now to discuss the Black Lives Matter movement. Without further ado, here is Chalet and I's conversation on what's going on, why it's happening, and what we can all do as a collective to help. Chalet, thank you so much for coming on Lightworkers Lounge last minute to talk about something that is all weighing so heavy on our hearts.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here. I know it's not an easy subject to talk about, especially during this time period, but it's a much needed conversation. I appreciate you inviting me to talk about it.
Yes, it's so much needed. And just being on social media, I can't post my usual Lightworkers Lounge, like law of attraction, love and light.
Right.
Like this is not, I can't even post happy pictures on my personal account. Like, you know, I just told you some happy news before we started recording, and it's right. It is so hard to feel joy for anything right now, knowing that so many fellow humans are suffering.
Yes, yes, it's suffering. And I would love to have this conversation because I think there's a lot of misconstrued ideas about protesting, rioting, the history of Black people that have caused this type of anger in this world we live in today. So I'm excited about this.
This type of
even
anger,
though it's a sad time.
It's so sad, but you know, we've got to step up and have these conversations and get the word out and create change. But even just saying that, I feel anger and I get pissed off because it's like, how long have we been saying let's create change? And it feels like with recent events, the George Floyd and the protests and the riot, it feels like we're back at square one.
And yeah, it does.
An American woman who was raised in Brooklyn, New York, like, how do you feel right now seeing all this?
Oh my goodness. You know, I felt like a sense of grief. It's so funny because during this pandemic, before this pandemic even happened, I was writing a book about being mad. And I felt like the book wasn't complete. You know how you can just sense something is missing.
Right.
And I was talking about in a book how being mad is revolutionary. And then all of a sudden we got thrown into this pandemic, which was one, like, you know, facet of dealing with grief from learning that a lot of African-Americans are dying from this at a disproportionate rate. And then we got hit with another round of racism. And I make that clarification very clear because I don't want people to think this is new. I think that because it's being televised and because now we have video cameras and cell phones, that we can see what's happening. But just take note that this has been going on for centuries and years, and things have been swept under the table. We have people right now that are suffering in jails for crimes that they did not commit. So I just want to say this is like a systematic thing that's happened throughout generation from generation to generation.
It really has. And, you know, these past few days since this all just really blew up, I've been educating myself because I grew up in a family raised around African Americans, Hispanic people. Like, I've lived in a very diverse neighborhood all my life. And in my household, we didn't see color. It was just everybody is one. You respect everyone. End of story. So I've just been educating myself because I feel naive, because I used to be that person that said, well, all lives matter. All lives matter. We should just respect everyone. But recently I've realized, yeah, okay, all lives do matter. We should always love and respect everyone, always. But African American people have been at a disadvantage for so long. And I saw this really good analogy on social media yesterday where it said, if your house is burning down and you call for help and say, help, my house is burning down. And someone said, well, all houses matter, so figure it out. You'd be pissed. You'd be like, well, what can you do? My house is the one burning down, so please help me. And that
That's a powerful statement because, you know, I want people to get it clear that we're not saying that all lives don't matter. So I think that they think because we're saying Black Lives Matter that it negates every other life. That's not the point, right? And I explained to my students when I have my African-American literature class, I said, you know, if you were stuck on the side of the road, I could not, as a professor, think you're a student, like, you know, not think too highly of you as a student. But if I see you stuck on the side of the road in the middle of the night, I'm pulling over because you are my student and your life matters, whether I like you or not, you know, because that's what humanity is about. So the reason why Black Lives Matter, whether you agree with the movement itself is separate, but agreeing with the statement is important because it shows that you understand the history of Black people, especially Black people in America. You understand what's going on and that you're saying, hey, I understand that you were disproportionately killed in America. And I want to just say that your life matters to me. So just want to make that distinction.
That's very important to make. Yeah. I completely agree. And in some of my research, I've seen that some African Americans have been in jail for decades over something as minuscule as marijuana possession, whereas a white person in jail who has murdered someone has been in for a fraction of the time and is about to get out.
Yes.
What the hell is that?
It's a sad statement, and that's a part of the whole injustice. And, you know, I want to say, too, when it comes to protests and looting, of course, Stephanie, you know that we don't agree with looting and people doing these riots and burning down buildings and things like that. But I want you to understand the background of anger and how deep it can go. I know that I'm a pretty level-headed person, but like when we talked about last time when I caught my husband in bed, you know, I kind of went off. I went in a rage. I did things that I normally would not do, right?
Well, like disassociating.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I want you to understand that it's not separate from people feeling the inequality when it comes to in America, how they feel about the inequality of, you know, the way they're treated, the injustice in the prison system and the injustice in education and the injustice of all facets of their life. And it does trickle down to the economic injustice. So a lot of times when people are looting and stealing and burning down buildings, you always say, why do they burn down their own neighborhoods? Because they don't own those stores. You know, they don't have any economic interest. So we of course, logically see this is wrong. This is not good. You don't want to burn down your own neighborhoods. But for people that are disenfranchised economically, socially, politically, in every way, they don't have that mindset. And that anger has taken over them to the point where they are looting and stealing. And so I want people to understand that, not that you have to agree with it, because I don't agree with it, right? But just to understand that anger is deeper than what you think it is. And it can cause so many layers of issues and problems. And on top of the fact that we're living in a pandemic where people are already hurting economically.
Well, it is a perfect freaking storm out there. And it's sad. It's so sad. You know, I was watching, I think his name's Killer Mike. He's a rapper from Atlanta.
Yes, I love Killer Mike.
Did you see his speech?
Yes, he is wonderful.
and hurt and pain in his voice. Just, I had permanent goosebumps all over my body. But he was saying, like, you're protesting for Black Lives Matter, but you're taking down Black-owned businesses.
Yes, that is a problem.
It's such a problem, but I agree with what you said. If these people who are doing that, they've never known what it's like to work so hard and have that business and...
Yeah, not have achieved... You know, a lot of things I feel like people have felt like America has turned their backs on them and they haven't allowed them to achieve financial stability or financial success. Even in good times, African Americans always have the highest unemployment rate. You know, there is a problem. I study education. African Americans are the lowest on the totem pole when it comes to the graduating, especially African American males. So there is a problem. Now, I want to just say that I think that some of this is set up. I think most of protesters are peaceful and they want the right outcome and the right change. And some people are inciting riots that in a way that's leaving the blame on young African-Americans that may, you know, have, you know, different mindsets. But I think it's important that we understand this. And I saw this speech also by Tamika Mallory. She's a wonderful activist. And she said something very important about looting that I had already put on my Facebook profile, that to understand that, you know, I think that there's a different narrative when it comes with other people in Black. I've seen people when they win football games, burn cars, you know, loot, you know, places. And, you know, when things happen, you know, they loot and they burn and they all excited about losing or winning a football game. And, you know, we don't have this mass hysteria. But yet when people go out to protest and they do the same thing against Black people, now National Guards are called out. So there is a double standard.
Ooh, that is such a good point. You're absolutely right. Like high school football games, if they lose, all of a sudden, wow, I never looked at it from that angle.
Yes. And not only that, I think about the history, the way you do think about the way this country was started, the Boston Tea Party. That's what they did. And, you know, that's what they did. They looted, they burned down towns. And I'm thinking about my own knowledge of African-American history. So one of the things that was important that I noticed is that if you ever heard of the Black Wall Street, which is also Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's been made popular by The Watchmen. I don't know if you've seen the show, but The Watchmen is a good show. But if you look at that massacre, that's just one example. Rosewood is another example of towns, Black towns that were prosperous and that were doing well. As soon as they started doing well, they would go in, white people would go in and burn the towns down. That's what would happen. Not only burn the towns down, but kill hundreds of Black people were killed in these riots. Matter of fact, I just watched another documentary on Kuwali TV. Kuwali TV is a Black owned Black station that plays a lot of great Black movies, all the Black diaspora. And so if you've never, it's a subscription, but it's a great channel to, if you want to know more about Black history and Black people all throughout the world. I watched one of Wilmington, Delaware, where they went in and they people died and people lost their homes and had to start all over. So this is through history systemically, where looting and violence and burning is not a Black invention. So...
It's not. And our media, I feel, is trying to make it that way. You know, we could talk about conspiracies in the media for so long, as I'm sure you know. But I've seen some posts on social media where African-American people are filming it saying, look, here's the looters. They are throwing bricks into a window right now and they are not Black and they are not a part of our peaceful protest. We don't know who they are. I mean, it's gotten as bad as people saying they're seeing cops breaking in windows. And we even had a friend in Dallas yesterday show that they were carrying, like this forklift was carrying bricks to a protest. So there's those conspiracies. And, you know, speaking of the looting, I read something on social media yesterday that said, I got to be honest, the worst looting I've ever seen take place happened a few weeks ago when Washington collected over $500 billion in money while we were just left with a $1,200 check and having to buy food or rent.
Thank you. And not only that, I think it's happened throughout history where America makes it a priority to keep on taking care of the rich and keep on bailing out corporations and leaving the people who are hurting the most hurting more, you know, and I think that is a problem. And so, of course, I don't condone looting, especially for businesses, even if they're not businesses of color. People work hard on their businesses. I support my friends' businesses of all nationalities and races. And so I think it's important that we cherish, you know, people who have built these businesses. They're not making crazy profits, especially now during the pandemic, right? They need every dollar they can get. So I think it's important. But also, one thing that I want to take a note to is that a lot of people will attribute one or two bad characters to a whole race. And I think that's a real terrible thing that we do as a society. There are good people on both sides, and there are good people in all races. And we can't attribute one or two things that happen to being the character of the whole race.
Yes, I feel that. And that leads me into the next topic, is the police officers. Because I feel like there are good police officers, and there's police officers of color who are like, what the hell? You are making our jobs suck right now. Yes. I try and share some of the videos of the good cops, but it's hard not to stereotype them when you see the videos of like the George Floyd plus hundreds of others. But there are good ones out there.
Oh my God, there's great cops. And let me tell you, Stephanie, I'm so divided, and not divided, but I feel this issue is so important to me because my father is a retired New York City Police Department sergeant.
Wow.
Yes, he is. And my father was a great cop. We had a conversation about this, and he's just so hurt about this because as a Black man, but also as a man who's a New York Police Department, you know, officer, a sergeant, he retired as a sergeant. He understands, we all know there's good cops out there. I have friends right now that's working in the field right now, New York City Police Department officers. And I know they're good cops, Black men, Black women, white men, white women. And I will tell you that it breaks my heart because I don't want anything to happen to them either. You know, people I went to high school with that became police officers. So when I was speaking to my father about this, he said, one of the things that's missing in police officers is the community. You must have community policing. And you cannot be scared of the communities you police. My father, he came out to Vietnam. He didn't serve in the Vietnam War, but he was an instructor during the Vietnam War. And he said a lot of people that he became police officers during that time served in the Vietnam War. So when they came into certain communities, they weren't scared of anyone. And because of the fact that they had to interact with all different cultures because of them being in the Vietnam War, it seems that they were more community oriented. And I think we're missing that.
That's right. There is like a huge divide. It's them versus us. They're never like in the community. And yeah, those happy, positive videos I've been trying to share on social media, the police officers show up to the riots and they just take off all their gear, take off their bulletproof vests and say, listen, we are pissed off too. This sucks. We want to march with you.
Yes. And I think that's important that basically, you know, police officers show that solidarity to the communities they serve. Because to tell you the truth, if you cannot have a community, you can't go and talk to people in the community where you serve. You need to look at yourself. I would never, if I get to the point where I go and teach in a college class and I hate my students, I know it's time for me to retire, you know, because I'm not going to give them the best of me. And I'm not going to give them fear. Do I have some students that are just lackadaisical, that don't do anything? Yes. Do I have students who give me attitude? Yes. But at the end of the day, I want the best for all my students. And so I think it should be the same for anybody who works in any public service, right? That you want to see the best for everyone in your community. And if you can't go and speak to and talk to the people, even the people that don't look like you, may not act like you, the people who you think are, you know, doing bad things, if you can't talk to them and be one with them and have a community relationship, then you don't need to be policing these people.
Absolutely. I could not agree more with that, especially the public service, like teachers, police officers, like they have a lot of responsibility for enacting this change.
Yes. Think about it. You ever had a teacher? I remember going into, you know, we were taught at I went to mostly all Black schools, but I remember being in an all Black school. I've been lucky to have great teachers that loved me and cared about me and really wanted the best for me of all different cultures. When I grew up, matter of fact, one of my favorite teachers was a white lady, and she just loved me, all of us. And she treated us like we were her children. Okay. Her name was Miss Nordine. I never forget her. Yes. And so, and we had all different races of people who looked out for us like we were their children, basically. So, me growing up kind of naive to racism, and until I began to experience it in, Brooklyn, New York, and you get to be a teenager, you hear things and you see things, police brutality was one of the first things that I learned about when it came to racism, which was really sad because my dad was a cop and he always tried to make it very even, show me both sides of the spectrum. And my dad was a cop for over 20 years and he never had to fire his gun except one time and he never had to kill anyone. But he also said that he would go and speak to the guys, guys speaking on the corner. Hey man, you can go to school, do something with yourself. You smart. He would try to give them a chance and show them another side of life. And so I think that makes a difference.
That's huge. And I just wish that people who got into the field of being a police officer realize that it's not just about holding guns and protecting yourself in that way. It's, you really are. You're like a therapist. You're a counselor. Yes. That they should be taking psychology courses or something, because that's
they need to be light workers, Stephanie.
Yeah, I mean, they are at heart, but they're just overshadowed, and yes. There's no excuse for police brutality or for how some of these officers are handling these riots. Like before we hit record, I told you I got caught in one downtown Austin, Texas, and it's terrifying. But in a way, when I was caught in that riot, I thought, well, these guys are absolutely terrified for their lives because they are just walking into a crowd, not knowing who has a gun, who has a flamethrower, not knowing.
Yes. Yes. And there's another side to that, too. Like I was speaking to one of my friends who was a police officer. And he said, there's another side because police officers have been caught off guard. Even the nice ones sometimes have taken, bullets have gotten shot, have taken, have gotten into some situations that they wish they would have been more protected. So I do see both sides. And I think, it is, something about that where you come into communities where, you don't know, especially in these protests, you don't know what's going on and you're just like trying to protect yourself. But like I said, I think that both sides need to walk together. We need to have town halls with Black people and get to know the people that you're serving in community. One thing that happened when I was growing up, when my dad was a cop, they had a PAL. So PAL was like a partnership with the community. And so at this time, it was really a rough time because you're talking about the 90s when a lot of people were hooked on drugs and stuff. So a lot of my friends, a lot of people in my community grew up without parents. So what happened? The cops of all races, all cultures would step in. They would sponsor community programs for the kids. A lot of the cops became coaches for the basketball teams, for the little league baseball teams. Yes. I remember this growing up because my dad used to take me to these programs as a little kid. And my dad was even a cop for some little league teams, from little league. So what would happen? Well, if little Johnny, who maybe, was, mother was not feeding him because she was on drugs, he wouldn't look to go and, arrest little Johnny for every little thing. No, he was the coach to that football team or that basketball team or that little league team. He would say, little Johnny, are you okay? Come on, let me help you. I'm going to buy you some food today because I know you didn't get nothing to eat. They actually became connected to those children and it built a bond where a lot of those kids became police officers because of it.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And then those kids get older and they're not afraid of them when they're teenagers or if they're doing something wrong. Right. So they're like, oh, Johnny, I know him. I don't need to pull my gun out. I know him. He knows me.
Right. And there's a connection there. And I think there needs to be more of that. There needs to come back where people are, but first you have to look at the people as being human. That's the first thing I want to say, because if you look at them and you go into, I never forget, I was teaching one time on police brutality and there was a student in my class and she brought up her father being a cop and she happened to be a white student. And she said, yeah, as soon as he goes into a certain neighborhood, he knows to take his gun because he knows those people are unruly. And it bothered me. And I thought about it for weeks because there is a mindset that some people go into and we cannot ignore our subliminal racism. We cannot ignore subliminal prejudice or biases that we carry with us. All of us have them, And those biases, when you're in positions like a power, like police officer, can take over. And so if you're going into a community and you automatically thinking that this community is a community that you need to bring a gun in, or you may need to shoot somebody because these people are thugs and animals, then your thinking is already off for serving a community.
Yeah. And you've already got your guard up and your gun up, quite literally. So you're already on edge. So if right. someone looks at you wrong, or someone even looks like they have a gun in your pocket, you're just going to pull it out and pop off.
Yes. It's terrible.
And if you could just go into those neighborhoods without that mindset. I've always been that way. I've never been like, that neighborhood's bad. I'd throw myself in the middle of it and be like, okay, watch. I'm going to write my house in there. And look, nothing happened to me. People actually said hello. Like when I lived in Charleston, I didn't live in the best neighborhood, so to speak. And I would run everywhere. And I would go hang out on their front porch with them. And I was like, what? People are afraid of this? These are the nicest, kindest, and I felt the safest.
Right. You know, but Stephanie, this is the thing too. It's not that you didn't see color, right? Because everybody sees color, right? You see me, you know, I'm a Black woman. It's just that you respect difference, you know, and that's key. You respect difference and you don't judge people by their color, you know? And so I think that's key to where the society that we're living in today, right? Is that you have to respect difference and that you respect people from all races, all classes, all genders. And you say, you know what, I'm not going to judge people by the color of their skin or by, you know, what I've seen on TV. You wouldn't believe how many people judge people by what they saw on TV. Oh, yeah, but I heard Black people were all this way. I've had students that have come up to me and say, you know, Professor Baptiste, you're so cool because you're the only person I've ever interacted with as a Black person in power. And I realized that all these stereotypes that I was taught as a kid are just wrong, you know? And so I love when students come up to me and say that, because I want to be that example to show them that my race is different than what they've been taught, you know? And so we have to be willing to have these difficult conversations. And I think that people are not willing to do that. They're only willing to talk to people that agree with them. That is wrong. You need to talk to people that disagree with you, because that's how you enact change.
That is so powerful right there. And that is so true. You have to be comfortable with getting uncomfortable and talking to people that have a completely different upbringing and a different life than you. And, you know, I think I'm lucky in a sense that I grew up for like most of my childhood years on welfare. So I was surrounded by diversity and just people on my level. And then my mom got her master's degree and she still remained a single parent, but we made a lot more money in our family. And so then we lived in a nicer neighborhood. So I've literally had a taste of both. And so none of them hit me. I can go anywhere. And I'm always-
And there's a power in that. There's a power in that, Stephanie. You know, that a lot of people cannot say that they have experience. And I'll give you one of my stories just about how race and how we can have our implicit biases. So when I was teaching in New York City, I used to teach for the Borough of Manhattan Community College. They needed a professor to go teach in Spanish Harlem, right? Now, mind you, I'm always taught in, you know, I'm coming from Mega Evers. That was an all Black college. Then I taught at BMCC, very diverse, all different cultures. And I was just used to a very culturally diverse group. Well, I realized when I got to Spanish Harlem that I wasn't capturing the students' attention like I was, right? And because this was mostly all Spanish students. So what did I do? I went back, I pulled out all my literature that I knew. I called my Spanish friends. Hey, what are some of the things that you're reading? I looked up some history about them. You know, just a little bit about the history. I talked to some of my Cuban friends and my Puerto Rican friends and my friends from Dominican Republic. And, you know, they told me all the little, kind of things that happen even among the Spanish cultures where one culture may not like another culture. And so I pulled on the literature that spoke to them. And when I did that, oh my God. And I went back into the class with this literature and I taught them this. I realized, first of all, that I didn't think that I knew what I thought I knew, you know, because I have been raised in New York City all my life. I thought, oh, I have Spanish friends. I know enough about them. No, I was ignorant to what was really going on inside of Spanish life and inside of a Spanish household. And so until I educated myself and began to go and now teach on their level, then I realized that my class was enlightened. I even took them to the New Yorican Cafe, which was started by New Yorican is a term for like New York and Puerto Rican. And so it was just an experience that we had together that was really powerful because I took the time to learn about another culture.
Wow. That is the key, is to immerse yourself in it. In one of the podcasts recently, I talk about how whenever I go on vacations, quote unquote, I always immerse myself in local culture. Even when I went to I did not stay in the tourists in the resort.
Me either.
I took a public bus and I went to like a little village in Mexico where nobody spoke a lick of English. And immersed myself in it. Immersed myself in it. Most people would be like, you are a tiny little blonde haired, blue eyed white girl. Kill yourself. And it's like, no, because this is how I've been since I was a kid. And I've never, of course, knock on wood, never had anything happen to me. People are just shocked that someone that looks like me will come up to them and say, teach me about your way of life. I'm so interested. And
I love that, Stephanie, because that's me and you are definitely soul sisters, because I do the same thing. Like, even when I went to Cuba, I always have this thing when I go to another country, like, go off the beaten path. I want to see how the people live, really, and not just, you know, just the touristy thing. I'm not a touristy person. But when I went to Cuba, I took a ferry. I was probably the only person that wasn't Cuban, and to another part of Cuba just to see how the people lived, you know? And what an eye-opening experience it was, because, you know, and if you go to the main parts of Cuba, it's, you know, pretty touristy for the most part, right? But when I took this little ferry to the other part of the island, it was amazing to see the things, the difference that I saw there. And, you know, nobody spoke English. And then I was asking questions and they were like, oh, we can't talk to you because, you know, we were taught not to talk to you know, tourists. And I was like, really? Wow. Then I found this little place that fed me. So everything was like an experience, you know? And so that's the important thing, to educate yourself on the history. Why are these people rioting? Why are they looting? Why are they so angry? Educate yourself, if you really are concerned about it, on the history before you make a rush to judgment about a people who have been systematically disenfranchised for hundreds of years.
Yeah. Do you think racism is more prominent in the United States than other countries in the world?
You know, that's a great question. United States is unique because of its diversity. So I don't know if it's more prominent. I think we just have a lot more diversity here. So we see it, you know, it's, and the history is so wrought with pain and, you know, adversity when it comes to race and racism. And of course, our history of being enslaved is part of that, that we're still trying to overcome, you know? I think that's a problem. But, you know, I'm thinking about other countries that have dealt with racism, certain parts of like South Africa, you know, you think about that, that have dealt with racism. And there are other parts of even Germany that have dealt with racism. So I don't think it's unique to America. I just think that I know when people live in other countries, I hear them say, I've never dealt with racism the way I've dealt with in America, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've heard that before, because I've only lived in America. I can't say, you know, whether it's not true, but I will say that maybe there's like a subliminal racism. And I think in some other cultures, there are more like classism is really big, you know? So if you're not from a certain class, you're more ostracized than if you're a certain culture.
That's very true. And this even circles back to our media here in the US, because I definitely think our media needs restructuring to say,
yes.
Because I've got a lot of friends who are world travelers, just true free spirits. And I've been to Costa Rica, the Bahamas, and I will say, and along with my friends, we've never felt more unsafe than we do in major cities like Chicago or New York or LA. And even talking to people from Germany or Europe or anywhere, they're like, yeah, we thought the United States was like the golden land, but there's never been. I remember a couple from Germany when I was talking to them in Costa Rica, they said that they've never seen so many homeless people living under bridges and tents. And
oh my goodness. LA was so, that's the thing that got me about LA, the homelessness, I'll tell you. Yeah. And even in New York, but definitely I never seen anything like that, like I've seen in LA, and the homelessness and the poverty. I think United States has more of an economic problem. And I think that problem trickles down to Black people and African Americans, where there's a problem with white supremacy. And the white supremacy issue is we don't want Black Americans to have a piece of the pie, which is so ironic to me because we helped build this country. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want us to have a piece of the pie, but you wanted to use us for free labor so we can build what you now have as a large piece of the pie. you know.
It's so wrong and backwards. And when I lived in Charleston, South Carolina, that was when I really started to say, okay, yeah, I've been raised that all lives matter, but I really started to see how ingrained racism is into families. I remember I went to the grocery store in Charleston once, and I used to always see this horrible African-American girl. She would always catch me out at the cash register, and we would talk. We became friends, and I told her one time, like, I'm going camping over on Wabala Island this weekend. I was like, have you ever been? And she looked at me and said, girl, my ancestors worked way too hard to get me in a house. If you think I'm going to sleep outside, hell no. And I was like, oh my gosh. But like, she was being funny, but there was a hint of seriousness to it.
Yes. Like, yes.
Wow, she's not kidding. Like, and it's,
yeah, true. You know, that's a funny, yeah, she was being funny, but I understand it. Especially Charleston is one of those places too, that I love going to, because there's so much rich history there. You know, when I went to the markets, that was a place where they sold slaves, you know? And so if people don't understand the history of slavery and the, you know, degradation and the whole lynching and everything that was done to really make sure Black people stayed in a certain place, you know, in society, then they won't understand, you know? But when I went to Charleston, even myself, and I, you know, one of the guys that was there that was born and raised there showed me, he was like, you see those right there? Those are where they, you know, sold the slaves, and you can still see the chain things on there. You know, it was eerie to me, you know, to have a stand in a place where people were sold, you know. And really, we have no reason to be ignorant. There's a big 1619 project that's going on right now that was headed by the New York Times. And it's really just educates people on the first slaves being brought to America. And so thinking about projects like that and places that bear the resembles of, you know, history and, you know, symbols of slavery, you know, we can choose to be ignorant if we want, but we don't have to.
I love that. And Charleston, yeah, Charleston is definitely an interesting place to go learn.
Very interesting, because you still have the Geechee people that really have been, you know, it's interesting, just an interesting place, you know?
I like all these stories are now popping up in my mind. And it's embarrassing for me to admit that I've heard these stories of my neighbors, because all of my neighbors where I lived in Charleston were African-American. And so I would hang out with them all the time. We'd have dinner together, hang out in the backyard, right, just talk and get to know each other. Like we were saying, we're just a community. But I remember my neighbor to the right, she was a public school teacher and she was African-American. And she always, I remember the first day of school was coming up and I was like, you excited? Da, da, da. She's like, well, not really, because the first day is always the toughest day. I said, really? How come? And she's like, because when some of the white students come in the classroom, some of them, and I think she taught like sixth grade at middle school, right, she said, some of them will walk in and go, see her and run out. And then she will get a call from parents saying, I will not have a Negro teaching my kids.
Oh my gosh, that's really terrible.
Today, that was just in 2017. And I almost threw up. I was like, you got to be joking. Please tell me this is just a really bad joke.
Yeah, you know, like, this is the reason why I stay on the East Coast. I mean, I must say that, you know, because the too much of the Southern states, and we even see it with Southern Christian evangelicals, they are still like stuck in a system of white supremacy. I don't know how else to say it, where, you know, it's almost back to where the system where they want to keep all the economic control. And so what do? We make sure that Black people don't get power. They don't own land. They don't own businesses. They don't run, you know, the court systems. They don't become judges or lawyers, you know? And so we do whatever we can to suppress these people. And I think there's still that mindset that exists in certain parts of Southern America, you know, and even certain parts of the Midwest. So I think that's really a shame.
Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget when she also told me that she tries to teach her students about Black history because it's so important. She always right. wanted to take them on field trips to the plantations, because what yes. better way than to show them the old slave homes and the fields and what they had to go yes. through, them out on the field and show them and teach them. But Charleston County was not allowed to go visit plantations. Every other school from like North Carolina, other neighboring.
Are you serious? And that's where the big plantations go. That's where
I'm like, who comes up with that rule? Some old white man in government? Like, what?
Actually, it's an eerie thing to go to a plantation because I almost felt like, oh my God, my ancestors could have been here. You know, it's really eerie to see it, you know?
It's uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable. The trees, but very eerie. You can almost feel, as an empath especially, like what went on there.
Yes, it's really like sad. You know, and so I will say that I feel like I hope that all of us during this time really reach inside ourselves and really find empathy for not just the situation that's going on now, but all races and all cultures that may be discriminated against or feel like less powerful because of what a society has put on them or generation or culture or, you know, a country. And I think that we need good leadership at this time. You know, I'm very disheartened by the leadership that's receiving, and it doesn't matter if who you want as president. So this is not a political message, but I think that at this time people need to step up and really show great leadership and take a stand and say that we will not tolerate police brutality. And I stand with you against the murders of Black and Brown bodies. And that is so important to take that stand and not make it seem like you are aligning with people who want to torture Black people and who want to maintain their power through violence.
Exactly. So as an African-American woman who's seen racism, experienced racism, how do you feel when you see people say all lives matter? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, for me, I'm at a maturity level where I'm a conversationalist and I never get angered by someone's ignorance. But I will say that I'm thinking that they don't get it yet. Like they don't get it, right? And they are basically minimizing that Black and Brown bodies are being slaughtered. And maybe they think this is just about one or two people because they're looking at the news and they're seeing George Floyd being murdered on camera. But remember, Ahmaud Arbery was just murdered on camera, jogging in the park. Then we have the instance of Breonna Taylor, who was shot in her home by a police officer who just didn't knock, just busted in. And then just the list goes on and on. These are just three people that we've known in the last couple of months. And these are all Black and Brown people. And then we see people like talking about Charleston, South Carolina. Remember the young white boy that killed all those Black people in church?
Yep. Bible study. I'll never forget. Yes.
Do you know how come they can kill people and not die? Like there's a double standard here. You know, they took him in handcuffs. I think they even took him to get him something to eat or, you know, in the McDonald's or something.
If that were a Black man, no man shot and shot like nine white people, he would be dead.
Oh my God. That wouldn't even been a question, you know? So it's, you know, a double standard when it comes to Black people. And if it was white people getting killed in the same breath, the same manner as Black people, then yeah, we can say all lives matter. But the truth is that that's not statistically what's happening. Okay. I see people. And another thing that irritates me is when people say, well, why do you care about when Black people are getting killed, when Black people kill each other? That's another comment that really irritates me. First of all races kill each other. Okay. and so that's not just a Black on Black thing. White people kill white people, Hispanic people kill Hispanic people, and the list goes on. Right. And I think when you say things like that, you divert the tension away from the violence that's being caused by people that are supposed to protect and serve. You divert the tension away from people who inherently are racist in their hearts and want to kill Black people. And so you minimize the killing of Black and Brown bodies when you say things like, oh, but Black people kill each other. It's really like a diversion tactic.
Mm-hmm. And all lives matter. I completely agree. And I'm embarrassed that I used to be that person that was like, of course, I love Black people, I love Hispanic people, but all lives matter. And it's like, no, like, I really realize now that Black people, when they leave the house, they have to have their guard up with where they go. In fact, just a few months ago, me and my boyfriend went for a bike ride around this very wealthy neighborhood in Austin. And I don't know why it popped in my mind, but when we stopped to take a break after riding through these perfectly manicured lawns and immaculate white people just sitting outside on their lawn, I was like, Chael, if we were black riding our bikes through this neighborhood, just minding our business, just going for a bike ride, we would have people looking at us. And I guarantee some people might even call the cops.
I lived in Dallas, Texas for 4 years, and I was a professor at an almost all white school, college. And I've had people call me Negro. Like, I've had so much people complain on me. I taught a book called Things Fall Apart by Chinwe Akibe. Very powerful book. And it's an African culture that I taught, and I've had people complain on me because I've taught literature that was not like all white. So racism is real, and it's institutionalized. So it's not always, right there in your face or blunt, right? Racism is hidden and it's underneath the sheets. And people sometimes know that they're racist and they're biased, and they find these little loopholes to get other people of other cultures because they're intimidated by them or they don't want them to see them prosper. And so I think that that's the racism that hurts the most, not the racism that's blunt. I can deal with you saying you don't like black people out front. You know, what hurts the most is when you don't say you don't like black people. This is why I don't believe in political correctness, because political correctness allow people to cover up their true intentions. And so I believe that, you know, when you have this kind of institutionalized racism, undercover racism, that's what's hurting society even more, because people are covering it up, acting like they're trying to be fair when they're really not.
Okay. And that brings me to the next point that I really wanted to talk about with you is social media. There are so many white people with prominent profiles. Sorry, you can hear my dog barking. But people are getting mad because white people are not saying anything. So do you think it's just as bad to not say anything at all?
Yes. If you are silent, that means you are okay with my oppression. If you are silent, that means that silence is a form of protest too, right? And so if you choose to be silent on my pain, then you're making a statement, a loud statement, by saying that you basically are choosing to side with the oppressor. And so I feel like people have a responsibility, especially those that have a position of power and influence, to speak up. You mean to tell me you can take 1,000 selfies a day and I can see everything you're doing with your family, your dogs, every little outfit you're wearing, every body part you have grown on you or bought, you know, and you cannot stand up and say, I stand with people who are against police brutality, against black and brown bodies? What? There's a problem with that. And I think that we need to take note of people who are being silent. I have had people in my school who are my colleagues that have texted me and said, you know, I'm so sorry. I feel so bad about this. And I always tell them, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything. But at the end of the day, I respect it. I appreciate it because they're showing me that they're speaking out for something that's so impassionate to my life and the life of my children and my children's children. And if anyone who is a person of color and has children and families and live in this society, so silence is deadly in this situation. You know, there are times when I talk about silence being important and being necessary. In this situation, silence is deadly.
That is so true. I'm so glad you brought that point home. I've noticed that a lot of white social media influencers, they're finally starting to speak up. And they're saying, I'm sorry, I haven't said anything until now. I just don't know what to say. I feel uneducated. And a lot of them always end it with, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I'm afraid to say the wrong thing. So what do you think they mean by I'm afraid to say the wrong thing? Are they afraid to say something that's accidentally racist? Are they afraid to? But I think it's also, there's so much heat on social media right now. People are triggered, they're sad, they're mad. And people are just afraid to say the wrong thing. Like, what do you think?
You know, I can respect that though, Stephanie, too. I mean, I think it's important for them to even say that than not to say anything, because, you know, that's real. Like, you don't want to say the wrong thing, and you don't want to say something that you didn't have intention to mean this way, but you, especially just saying, listen, I'm not educated enough on the issue. Say that. Be okay. It's okay to say that. Sometimes, even as an English professor, I have to go back and do research because I don't know about that, right? And that's okay. I think my students respect me by saying that, then they give them knowledge or say something that I will want to regret, take back later, right? And regret saying, or something that really was just an ignorant statement, but because I didn't want to take the time to do the research, I said something stupid. So I think it's very important that we respect as Black people, as minorities, as anybody, when someone says, come out, make a statement, hey, I think this is wrong, but I don't know what else to say right now. Because I'm really looking into the issue. The issue is deeper than what I thought it was. And I need to really do some more research before I come out and make my own judgment. And I think it's also important that we don't beat down on people when they come out with their judgment, when they say what they want to say, because that's where our conversations can get started. And this is where you can educate people about your position and their position. And you can have really intelligent, intellectual, life-changing, transformational conversation. And if people feel uncomfortable to come out and speak about it, then they are going to be silent, and we don't need, the silence is deadly right now. So I think it's okay when they say, you know what, I don't know what to say right now.
Exactly. I agree. And I've seen opposite ends of the spectrum. I've seen people post Black Lives Matter. This is fucked up. We need to change this. And people say, well, all lives matter. And then I have friends who have husbands who are police officers, and they'll say, we don't agree with what's going on, but please don't forget that there are good cops and their families are at home absolutely terrified every day when they go to work, and people attack them and say, no, all cops are assholes and murderers. And it's just like, oh my gosh, just turn your comment section off or something.
Yes, exactly. And whenever you say all, you're already losing. Whenever you're saying all people are like, all Black people, all white people, all cops, that's already a law statement. Like, that's a boo statement. That's what I call them, boo. Because, then you're already ignorant. You have already lost the battle. You know, in any situation, you're going to find good and bad people of all colors, all races, all ethnicities. We need to stand. We need one another. Stephanie, I need you as a white woman to stand beside me as a Black woman. I need my Hispanic sister. I need my Indian sister. And these sisters I really do have to stand by me, you know. Because guess what? Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. So maybe it's my turn, your turn, for you to stand by me, but maybe it's next time it will be my turn to stand by you, you know? And so it's very important that we stick together.
That gave me truth bumps. That's going to make me cry. It's true. It's exactly it. And I feel bad that I really haven't been active on my platform with this until, you know, things had to get bad as another Black man dying, because I just thought that I just felt powerless. I feel like there's nothing I can do. This system is so deeply ingrained, and it's going to take so much effort to change. But I thought, like, I was bullied in school. I was bullied like hell. And if one person would have just stood up and gotten between me and the bully and said, hey, this isn't right, stop.
Yes.
I would have changed my whole life narrative.
Oh my goodness. Yes. And see, that's a great example. You getting bullied and somebody standing up would have changed your narrative. You know, I always felt like an outcast too growing up in school. Even though I went to all Black school, you know, I wasn't always treated right because my mom didn't buy me the latest clothes, even though we could afford it. My mom was teaching me not to be materialistic. I appreciate that now, but going to school, it was like really tough, you know? And, you know, I never felt like I was pretty enough, or, you know, I was really smart, but I wasn't always the smartest, you know? So it was always this, you know, kind of dynamic with me that kind of like made me feel like an outcast and an outlier in school. And I didn't really have a lot of friends. So I was a loner and I was the only child. So, you know, I had these combination of things, and I've always thought, you know, God, if I could just have an advocate, you know, for me to really, you know, have my side. And this is the importance of also, we need to also find the importance of mentorship. I will say that in my, you know, a lot of people, I have a lot of friends that are like Black power, everything got to be Black, you know, and I understand them. I understand where they come from, you know, but in my life, because I've lived this life, I have had people that have stood up for me in all races. And sometimes my support, my love didn't come from where I expected it to come from. Let me just say that. And even when it comes to my dissertation, I'm writing a dissertation on African-American history. I have a, you know, very eclectic group of people that are on my committee, you know, white men, you know, black man and a white woman. And I'm telling you, I have this lady who's a white lady. Her name was Dr. Mann. She was like a lifesaver to me. She stepped in and was like, I'm going to help you get this dissertation. We're going to work. She was like a cheerleader for me at the moment where I thought that I was going to give up. So you never know when your help is coming from. And you cannot close your mind to thinking that only one race is the race that's going to support you, or only one type of person, or only one gender. It's just, you are limiting yourself so much by thinking that. And I'm so grateful that I have opened my mind to other people and other cultures and other races. And so I find power and strength in those people that love me the way that I try to give out love.
That's such a good point. Such a good point, Shale. And, you know, last night, as I sat at the dinner table with my boyfriend, I said, okay, what if we had a few kids and they were sitting at the dinner table with us and they knew what was going on in the world? What conversation would we have with them, the new generation that's up and coming? We would, of course, teach them from day one that love and respect everyone, no matter their race, gender, sexual orientation. But it has to go beyond that, because I don't think this is going to be fixed anytime soon. So we've got to teach the new generation to not only not see color in that sense, but to stick up for people who are disadvantaged.
Yes. So
my question for you is, do you have two kids? Or?
I have three children.
You have three. Okay, that's right.
Yes.
Yes, I have three children. I have two girls and one boy.
Yeah. So what conversations do you have at home? Because I know a lot of the change starts at home.
Yes, my kids are so funny because, you know, it's a different dynamic. My kids were raised totally different from me. First of all, technology, right? It's like, I was raised in technology world too, but not like these kids, right? and so they're exposed to everything. They know the news sometimes before I know it, which is interesting. But also because of the area that we live in, my kids go to a area that was predominantly that is predominantly white. And so that has had its disadvantages and advantages in some way. Because I think when my daughter was growing up, she thought that she wasn't pretty enough. She didn't want to wear her hair in an afro because she would be teased. You know, people would, you know, say things about her hairstyles and stuff. And she wanted to be white. She was like, why my hair can't look like the, you know, white silky hair, you know. And she thought that that was a standard of beauty. And so I realized I had to step up and really educate her. And I mean, I showed her all types of black movies, you know, and I make them even do this to this day. I made them watch Self-Made. That was the Netflix special about Madam C.J. Walker, one of the first black millionaires. And, you know, I made her watch documentaries. I made her watch old movies such as Roots that kind of taught her about the slavery and, you know, what it did to us as black people. And, you know, I showed her these different types of Malcolm X, just things that made her read different books. And so what I wanted to show her is black pride, that we have black pride, that you can be proud of who you are. And because you live in a great neighborhood and maybe it's mostly white students at the neighborhood, that doesn't mean that people teasing you, it's their ignorance, the reason why they're teasing you. So, and then with my son, I've had to be so cautious, even in this time period, to teach him about how to manner himself, you know, how to be a respectable young man, how to have manners. How do you speak to police when they come? You make sure they see your hands. Make sure, you know, you're not hiding anything. Make sure you look them in the eyes, you know. And so it's been a scary thing for me as having a young man raised in a society with you know, police brutality being real. But I must say that I've, you know, had my own, you know, interactions with cops and here in this community. And even though it's, you know, mainly white police officers, which needs to change also. I think that more police officers need to be more diversified. But they've been very nice to me and I've never had anything but good experiences. So, but I'm always skeptical. Even my son, he wanted to go to a protest yesterday and I'm like, yeah, I'll have to be there with you because anything can jump off and I need to be there to protect you. And I know I won't be there forever because he's 15. Soon he'll be, you know, his own man. But, you know, it is this like scariness inside of me that builds up when I think about my kids, because I want them to be protected. I want them to love themselves. I want them to know how beautiful their blackness is, which is something that I didn't have to grow up feeling, because I was raised in a black community with black people who had black pride, who, you know, watched black movies, who read black books. And so it was something that was innate in me. And I realized that with my children, it wasn't innate in them. Even though they can play with all cultures, sometimes they look at themselves as being inferior. And I had to give them that, you know, that boost, that pride, that confidence.
Wow. See, that's really just stirring up emotions in me when you said that from a young age, you have to teach your son, because especially African-American men, they are just like the worst and the disadvantaged with the police brutality. You've had to teach him, like, okay, if you have an interaction with a cop, you need to look them in the eye, show them you don't have anything. Like, do you think my mom ever had to say that to my older brother? No.
Right.
Never had. Like, it's just so sick, sickening.
It is sickening. It's sickening. And I think that it's also sad that we, you know, that we're scared, you know, like I was, he wanted to do something that was righteous, and fear jumped in my heart. And I'm a revolutionary, you know, in my mind, I would be like, hey, yes, let's do it. But then I was like, oh my God, suppose somebody happens, suppose somebody jump off and he's near them, and suppose somebody throw a bottle and they arrest him. And, you know, so it was just nothing but fear that jumped up inside of me. And I don't want to live through fear, and I don't want to teach him to live through fear. And so it's a balance that a lot of us parents have to do. Well, we don't want to instill fear in our children, but we have this fear of, you know, inside of us, because we know what the reality is in the world that we live in. And so that's a scary place to be.
Exactly. Now on social media, I've been trying to find the best resources to give people. There's great places to donate. There's awesome social media profiles to follow. What advice or information can you give us to educate ourselves more, to help make a difference, to donate time or money?
Yes. You know, I think there are so many great books out there to educate yourself to what's going on, and that really helped me figure it out. Like, you know, and even with myself, I'm still educating myself on everybody's history, on my history and other history. I still read books right now that have to do with our history. But The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander was a great book. If for those that read, you know, Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, he has a lot of great books. And he taught, you know, things like that, and books that really educate you about what happened. Race Matters by Cornel West was another one. The Autobiography of the Ex-Colored Man by James Weldon Johnson. The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison were books that really like set my soul on fire and got me to know a lot about, you know, things that happened before I was even born. My Soul Is Rested, The Story of the Civil Rights Movement in the Deep South by Howell Raines is another great book. And James McBride has a book called The Color of Water. He talks about being a black man with a white mother. And that was a great book. But it's so many different books that you can read. And some of them are controversial, but it's very important that we educate ourselves on what's going on in our communities. And, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois wrote a book called The Black Reconstruction in America. So we have great leaders. You know, if you don't know anything about slavery, pick up Frederick Douglass, the slave narratives. Those are life-changing books that will teach you about what happened in America during slavery. Those are just a few people. I hate to name people, but if you don't like to read, there are so many documentaries out there on Netflix, on movies that you can watch. Educate yourself on the history first, so that way you can have a voice in what's going on today. So that way you can have a different perspective. Because if you don't know about the history, you think this is just about one or two instances, and it's not. So do that. There's a station called Kowali TV that does everything, but it's owned by black women, and they do everything black. Like I mentioned them before, very, you know, great station. So please, you know, be part of the conversation. You know, get in, ask somebody, you know, hey, educate me. If you don't want to read, if you don't want to watch, ask someone who's knowledgeable. Do your research.
Absolutely. That's what they need to do. And immerse yourself.
Get out. Yeah, immerse yourself. Don't just comment on social media because it sounds right to you. Mm-hmm. You know, And I want to say to everybody, get out there and vote. Your vote matters. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are. I don't care. Your vote matters. That's one way. And it's not just about voting for the president, right? It's down to your judges, to your local officials. They matter. They matter sometimes most to you because they're the one who changes the policy right around you.
Absolutely. And I like to say I vote with my dollar. So I think it's important right now, especially to support Black businesses. Find a local business owned by a Black man or a Black woman and go support them.
Yes, support Black businesses, support minority-owned businesses as much as you can. You know, we always, like, I go to Walmart and Target too, but, you know, sometimes I feel guilty because they are billionaires, you know, making their money off the backs of hardworking people, you know, so.
That's absolutely right. And use social media right now, you know, try and limit yourself to like the brutality videos because those are just nasty to watch. And I feel like it's important to know that, yes, that shit is going on, but it can also bring you down and just make you feel so deflated and, and angry. So try and just use social media right now to educate yourself because there's some really good, peaceful profiles where you could just gain knowledge.
Yeah, and self-care. So even if you do watch them and they start to get into your spirit, don't let it seep into your spirit. Find something. You know, I've been doing something since this happened. I've been posting pictures of my kids that bring me joy. And so I say, this is my happy place today. You know, that's what I'll do. This is my happy place today. And, you know, just old pictures of my children when they were young or something that made me happy. If it was a butterfly I saw outside my house or something. I'm balancing my grief with something positive.
That's perfect. Yeah, we should all be doing that right now because it is a very intense time. We are all feeling it, all of us humans on earth. And we're going to come out of this stronger than ever. And I really do believe that this time around, there's going to be change. It's going to happen.
Yes, I think that, you know, the protests are powerful. And I'm so excited to see people of all races, all cultures getting together, protesting from all over the world, UK, everybody. Because we can make a difference and we can make a change just by sticking together.
Hell yeah. Shelley, I feel so much lighter after talking to you. I know in the beginning of our conversation, I just woke up heavy as I have been the past few days. So again, I'm so thankful that you decided to come on the podcast.
I'm so excited to be talking to you, Stephanie. I'm coming to visit you soon.
Hell yeah. I can't wait to meet you and give you a big hug and talk even more about this and ways we can continue. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It's just great that people are going to listen to this. And hopefully we've changed some minds or opened some mindsets. Yes. Feel lighter and more confident to get out there and fight the good fight.
We got to fight the good fight. If I can just say one more thing, be a mentor to someone too during this time. Someone that's not your race, not your culture. Someone that maybe live on another side of a neighborhood. Go mentor someone that's not like you. And see how that might change your life, your story, and change your perspective.
Yeah, because it won't only just change them. It'll change your mindset.
It will. Really.
I love that. All right, Shelley, we will definitely have you back on the show again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie.
And we will talk to you again soon.
Yes. Bye-bye.
You know, Shelley didn't mention it on the show, but she's actually the author of the incredible book called Black from Scratch. This honors the roots, history, and legacy of Black people. In this book, she interviews people from Africa to the Caribbean to America just to highlight that Black history does not begin with slavery. Their stories date back to being kings and queens, warriors and war princesses. She really highlights the Black history to be resilient, strong, and powerful. It is a really incredible. It reminds me of Humans of New York. You guys ever heard of that Instagram or that movement, Humans of New York? It's real people with real stories, and this is an incredible way to get to know Black history and where they came from. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I hope you learned some. I hope you're going to go out and educate yourself. As Shelley and I said, the most important thing you can do is just immerse yourself in community. Go out there. You could read all you want, listen to all the podcasts, watch all the documentaries, but there is no better way to understand what people are going through as a race than to immerse yourself in the culture and the community. You have everything to gain and nothing to lose, and you're a light worker, and this is what we are here to do. It's safe. It's comfortable. It's normal. It's what we need to do. This week, I don't want to end the podcast with a song. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right to play any music right now. What I want to do is end the podcast with a moment of silence. To honor all of the people who are victims of police brutality, to honor all of the people who are victims of racism, to honor everyone who has ever been a victim of hatred, I want to offer a moment of silence.